Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, we're getting down to the wire. One, two, well, let's see, three, four, five, including today, more days, weekdays anyway, before the election. And welcome to our program, Wednesday, the 1st of November here, 2006. Our quote for the day from Abraham Lincoln, if you once forfeit the confidence of your fellow citizens, you can never regain their respect and esteem. You can fool all of the people some of the time. You can even fool some of the people all of the time. But you can't fool all of the people all the time. Abraham Lincoln's words perhaps coming back to haunt some of the folks in the current administration. Actually, right across the political spectrum. Bishop Harry Jackson is with us. He's with thehopeconnection.org. He's the senior pastor of the Hope Christian Church, headquartered in Bowie, Maryland. Pastor Jackson, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom, for having me.
Or Bishop Jackson, I should call you.
That's fine.
I understand that you are you positioning yourself as a spokesperson for the African-American Christian community. First of all, and secondly, if I'm reading this news release essentially that was sent out to us correctly, that you say that community is strongly opposed to gay marriage. Am I so far correct?
You are so far correct, and I say that based on many of the polls I'm sure you've seen, mm-hmm. that the African American community is very conservative with regard to gay marriage.
Right. I'm curious, why is it that people who have suffered oppression, and we've seen this in so many cases, across the board throughout history, people who have suffered and are still suffering oppression readily participate in oppression?
Well, that's a leading question. I don't think there's a ready participation in oppression, but there is a little bit of a resentment, I think, going forth that the parallel between civil rights movements and the gay rights movement have been drawn so closely by gay activists. It simply isn't the case. Unless you believe that being gay is absolutely something ordained, like a third sex kind of thing, then it is a choice as opposed to the color of my skin. And I think that's where people separate. I think a lot of blacks have no problems with civil rights being extended to gay people and their lifestyle in that way that they choose to participate in. But to say that it's the color of, one man said, your sin is equivalent to the color of my skin seems to be a little bit of a confusing kind of thing for many black people.
But the biology is in. I mean, there have been numerous studies that have found that there are actual structural differences, at least among gay men. They haven't found them with gay women. Mm-hmm. But among gay men, that there are actual structural differences in the brain. And so you can argue that people actually, yeah. men anyway, gay men, actually are born gay, just like you were born with dark skin. And, or for that matter, I was born with light skin. I mean, we are born the way we are. So why should we discriminate against somebody based on how they were born?
That's not a discrimination. I would say I can question your science. I don't want to take the time today to do that. But I'll say this. The Bible declares that the acceptable form of sexual expression would be in a heterosexual relationship, one man with one woman. So if I assume that you're right, that someone is born gay, then the Bible says basically that the only appropriate outlet for sexual expression would be within the context of one man, one woman sexual union. Therefore, masturbation, pornography, and same-sex relationships would not be suitable, biblical, or authorized sexual expression.
Well, the Bible also says that if you eat shellfish or if you wear clothing made of two different types of fabric, that you could be subject to the death penalty. That you, if you disrespect your parents, you should be subject to the death penalty. Should we put those things into law?
What you're looking at is the fact that those Old Testament ordinances are, in fact, the basis of many of our laws today in America. And obviously, there is, with the New Testament, if one reads deeper, you'll find that there was a lot of transitional things that happened. But I think there is still an admonition against gay marriages is not condoned in Orthodox Christian church.
Then please, because I've read both the Old and the New Testament more than once, every word in them. And please tell me, Bishop Harry Jackson, what am I missing here? There are 600 and some odd specific injunctions in Leviticus, and many of them repeated in Deuteronomy about things like not eating, you know, what is kosher and what is not, essentially, that don't transition into the New Testament and the Christians by and large ignore, although some observant and Orthodox Jews continue to observe.
Are you a practicing Christian, if I ask you that?
I am.
Okay.
I consider myself to be one. You know, as you know, there are many different definitions of that.
Yes.
But I consider myself to be a Christian.
Good.
And say so proudly. In the New Testament, first of all, with regard to our laws are based on Mosaic law, I'm assuming that you're not talking about the law of Deuteronomy, you're talking about the law of Moses, the Ten Commandments. There are only two of those Ten Commandments that are actually part of our law, and as Thomas Jefferson pointed out, the two against stealing and murdering were part of British law 200 years before Britain converted to Christianity, before the Heptarchy became Christian.
Right. Well, also, Judeo-Christian thought life philosophy concerning our law is rampantly filled with biblical references, such as every 7 years your credit ratings and whatever are renewed. All of that is based on scriptures on Deuteronomy.
Not much anymore, though.
I'm sorry?
Not much anymore, the seven-year rule. I mean, it used to be that if you were bankrupt after 7 years, it was wiped clean. That's no longer the case under the new bankruptcy law.
Well,
here's the big question, Bishop Harry Jackson, and the website is thehopeconnection.org. Jesus, to the best of my knowledge, never spoke to the issue of homosexuality. You're making the case that the Old Testament laws can be set aside because the New Testament is the New Covenant, and that New Covenant was delivered by Jesus. If he never discussed homosexuality, then why are we discussing it in a religious context?
Well, he didn't have to talk about it. It was an assumed situation. It wasn't as rampant as it is now. I think also if you look at some of the admonitions of Paul,
I would suggest it was far more rampant than, far more public than. I mean, you know, the Greeks were, you know, they had frescoes celebrating gay sex in public places.
Well, we have a fundamental disagreement. I think that there are admonitions against sodomites, temple prostitutes in the New Testament.
Not by Jesus.
Not by Jesus, yes. Jesus.
Jesus' admonition was, he who is without sin cast the first stone. In other words, back off.
Well, let me interrupt you. Are you saying that Paul's writings are not significant? Are you taking only part of the Bible and lifting it up against another part? Are you saying you believe some of the word and not all of the word?
I'm saying that if we are going to argue that Christianity, that the basis of Christianity is essentially anti-gay, that we have to look at the words of Jesus, yes. And the words of Paul, there are many words of Paul that Christian churches ignore right now. You know, Paul said specifically, I believe it was in his letter to the Romans, might have been the Ephesians, that women should cover their heads and be silent. They should sit in the back of the church. Do you do that in your church? Do you require women to cover their heads and remain silent? Then you're ignoring the words of Paul.
You don't believe in the inerrancy of the Bible, which is, that separates you from a lot of people in Orthodox Christianity.
Well, if you don't, Bishop Jackson, if you don't require that women sit in the back of your church with their heads covered and their mouths shut, you don't believe in the inerrancy of the Bible, because Paul specifically commanded that for the church.
Well, in the soundbite discussion we're having now, let me simply say there are a whole lot of theological reasons for transitions with culture, and most Christians today...
Well, now you're making my argument.
I'm sorry.
Now you're making my argument.
No, most Christians today do not, though, accept at this particular point that gay marriage is one of those things that has crossed over into an acceptable practice for this generation.
I understand that. And 30 years ago, most Christians didn't believe that interracial marriage crossed over. And 100 years ago, most Christians didn't believe that the end of slavery crossed over. I mean, isn't there a time when we as a society say, okay, these people are born this way, this is not their choice, and we're going to bring them into society and stop discriminating against them?
Well, number one, I disagree with your science. I believe it's still a choice that people make. Number two, I believe that this is not one of those issues that you can just cross over. I think that from my perspective as an African American, that there is a problem with The potential destruction of society as we know it, just as had happened with the Greeks and the Romans, etc., be if we allow homosexual marriage, if you will, to become the order of the day. I don't want to regulate what people do in their bedrooms. I simply am going to say, when you call it marriage, it has a potential to devalue an institution that's already in trouble all over America.
Why do you, here's an honest, I don't mean this as a leading question or anything, and we only have just a few seconds left. Why do you think the black community is, the African-American community, is more opposed to this than the white community?
I think because we are in need of stabilizing our families. I think that's it. I think blacks are more open to gays than the white community as individuals. But I think we are aware that we're losing a grip on traditional marriage and family in the black community, and we need to hold on to that.
Well, that makes a certain amount of sense. Bishop Harry Jackson, the hopeconnection.org is website. Thank you for being with us today, sir.
Thank you so much, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We'll be right back.
Every time we think about same-sex parents, oh my gosh, we exclaim. I mean, to people who want to provide a protective and nurturing family environment, have they no shame? It's so deviant. It's the Lord's holy word, as my second wife said to my third. That a family's based on obligation and fear. We're defenders of marriage. Connubial narcs, ever vigilant and patriotic, patriarchs, defenders of marriage, defending the institution against people who want to get married. One summer evening when my woman was doing laundry, I shared a six-pack with an old John Bircher, and oh so wisely he imparted an ancient quandary to ponder. He said it's nature versus legislature.
Welcome back. 22 minutes past the hour. Oh, no. Welcome back. Exposing the con and conservative is the Tom Hartman radio program. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number. Ron in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ron, your thoughts on this topic?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. You know what I find interesting is that the gentleman accused you of believing in one part of the Bible, not the other, or pitting passages against each other. I would submit this, as a scientist, and knowing that 450 species of animals have been identified as having homosexual, species there, that
behavior within the species, yeah.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. That's what I meant. He said he would question that science, but yet he doesn't question science when he turns on his light or starts his car. But when it comes to stem cells and when it comes to homosexuality, he questions the science. Yeah. It's not the same thing he accused you of doing when it comes to the Bible, picking the science that works for him and that he believes in, and ignoring the other science.
In a way, I mean, you know, there is a real push on the right to promote this idea that people are not born gay, that it's a choice, that it's a lifestyle, that you know, and because without that, the whole thing falls apart. It's just like the so-called right to life, the forced abortion crowd. The forced pregnancy crowd, who are saying that life begins at conception. And, if you believe that life begins at conception, then, yeah, you can build a case against abortion. But if you believe that life begins at viability, then that case falls apart. And so, you know, the core original assumption has to be defended. Otherwise, the entire superstructure falls apart. And the tragedy is that in this case in particular, you know, the science is pretty solid that you know, some people who are I'm assuming the vast majority of people who are gay are born gay, and perhaps maybe even beyond the vast majority, maybe 100% of the people who are gay are born gay, and it's got nothing to do with choice, you know.
And you know what, Tom? Yeah. Anybody who's honest with themselves doesn't even need the science. I mean, if you're going to be honest about this, just think back to grade school. Before people even went through puberty, I remember students who you could tell they were effeminate and actually grew up and were gay men or women. To me, it's clear if you're going to think back to your past experiences, you can identify children, like I said, before they even come into puberty.
Yeah. Well, you can identify it, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old in some cases. Yeah. Ron, thanks a lot for the point.
Thank you.
Well said. Casey in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Casey.
Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just was calling because when the guy says, like, you know, well, as an African-American, and I'm just like, because I'm black, and I'm like, what does that mean? Like, as a black person, then that means that we all think that way?
Well, that's what he's suggesting. I mean, we put him on the air because we get, you know, we're on the right-wing mailing lists, you know, as a radio show.
Which
talk
I
show.
Love, which is
and,
smart.
Thank you. And he's being put out to all the talk show hosts all around America as the spokesman for the African-American religious community in America. And so the right-wing talk show hosts are putting him on, and he's saying, well, you know, African-Americans all think that gays should not have the right to marry. And the right-wingers are all going, oh, good, good. I'm glad to know they're on board with us.
Right, they're on board with us. I'm glad you speak for everyone. Yeah,
yeah,
it just makes your stomach turn when you hear that, because the whole, I would even go as far as to say the whole point of race, you know, actual like skin color,
mm-hmm.
just kind of like God's artwork. Like, it doesn't make you act or think or feel any certain way. So when people say, as a black person or as a white person, like, that doesn't really mean anything. It's like your environment and surroundings. So.
Well, here's where it gets even more interesting, Casey. There is no gene for race.
You
know, there is a gene for the color of your skin. There's a gene for the color of your hair. There's a gene for the, you know, I mean, for all of the various characteristics that in aggregate we call race. But there is no one gene for any race, for, you know, I mean, these are small, but it looks like there may be a gene for homosexuality, and that it is passed exclusively through the mother. So it must just be on the Y chromosome. And wouldn't that be a kick? Because that's what the medical evidence is showing, that there is, in fact, a gene for homosexuality, because you can track it in families through the mother's side of the family, not through the father's.
I'm so glad we're waking up, because this whole, and then I just want to say real quick, it's like the same thing as, like, race is a mirage. It's like this whole deal about hiding behind God and trying to bring up homosexuality. Just real quick, every point that you said was correct. And so that guy, I hope when he's leaving, he's actually thinking about what it really means to be a Christian. And you ride around in your Mercedes and your money when greed is the seventh biggest sin.
There you go.
Millions of sins. It makes
there
it
you
the
go.
Top seven. Yep. Thanks.
Thank you, Casey.
Yes.
Although the seven, you know, to give credit, the seven deadly sins, to the best of my knowledge, are not actually laid out in the Bible. I think that's post-Catholic, but who knows? I don't know. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. We'll be right back.
Anybody here see the noise, see the fear and commotion? I think we missed it. Anybody here see the love, see the hate?
And welcome back to the pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman radio program, a listener-supported radio supported by our listeners supporting our sponsors. Please patronize the sponsors of the local station that you're listening to. Perhaps, I mean, that's really where the rubber meets the road, is our local affiliates being able to do well, to being able to do good by doing well. Because you patronize their sponsors and also our national sponsors, such as Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time, 1-800-425-2532, sacredgroundscoffee.com, their website. And Small Dog Electronics, get the latest iPods now, 1-800-511-MAX, or smalldog.com is their website. And by the way, over at sacredgroundscoffee.com, if you plug the word fall, as in autumn, F-A-L-L, into the coupon field when you check out, you get an extra 15% discount. Really cool. Real quickly, and then we're going to get back to your calls on this topic. A couple of notes. Folks in the chat room wanted me to remind you. Number one, I believe it. What is it? Belost. It's scrolling so fast I can't quite read it. If you want to get to our chat room, go to TomHartman.com. By the way, Belost for a while says, or Be Lost for a while says, anyone please in this chat get the information of Tom about the extra postage needed for mail-in ballots. Yes, in some states, the mail-in ballots weigh enough or are large enough or oversized enough that you have to put two stamps on instead of one, or you have to put extra postage on. So you might want to make sure what the circumstances, what the situation is in your state. And then also somebody in the chat room says, what about the blacklist that everybody's talking about, the Air America blacklist? Would you please comment on that? I'll just give you a quick there are a lot of companies that just don't want to participate in political talk radio. The Rush Limbaugh show has a blacklist. The, you know, I mean, right across the board. There are companies that just say, you know, put us on music stations, but don't put us on politics stations. The question in my mind is the Air America blacklist, which is over at fair.org and mediamatters.org, and is, you know, everybody's talking about now, is that blacklist essentially the same as the right-wing talk radio blacklist? And if it is, then c'est la vie. I have no problem with it. Companies that don't want to participate in politics, I understand. On the other hand, if our blacklist has 100 companies on it and Rush Limbaugh's has 8 companies on it, then I'd say we've got a problem. And we as a nation have a problem, and we might want to look at that. 1-866-440-8466 is our telephone number. And Mike in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you, Tom. Yeah, that was a really interesting guest, particularly because he's the self-proclaimed, you know, spokesman for such a huge group. If you ever had a half an hour after the election to bring him back on the air, mm-hmm. you know, there were quite a few interesting questions that I thought were associated with his stand on gay marriage.
For example,
the problem with minority marriage has never been the threat of gay marriage. We know that. It goes back to economic and cultural facets. But,
yeah, the biggest threat to marriage in the United States is poverty. I mean, you can
absolutely.
Document that very, very well. And tragically, the Republicans are not talking about poverty at all. And that is the biggest threat to marriage. And if you really, you know, want to end if you want to end divorce, then why not talk about criminalizing divorce? I mean, let's get right down to it here.
You know? I agree.
I mean, there are countries where it's against the law to get divorced. See, I remember being in Ireland about 15 or maybe 20 years ago and driving down the street in Ireland, and here's this giant billboard with a picture of a little girl and her father and mother on either side, and she's holding both their hands and she's sobbing and, you know, tears running down her face. And this giant headline on this billboard said, don't destroy her life. And I thought, what the heck is this? You know, it was like vote no on 12 or something like that. And so the next Irish person that I encountered, I said, you know, what's this billboard about? And they said, we're voting in the next election on whether to decriminalize divorce. Because as of that point in time, and this was, as I said, I don't remember how long ago, but I would guess probably 15 years ago or thereabouts. As of that point in time, it was against the law to get a divorce in Ireland. And they did vote to decriminalize divorce, so now it's legal. But it wasn't legal very recently, and that's still the case in several countries around the world. So, I mean, if you want to defend marriage, I guess that's really where you start, eh?
And their position on gay marriage, I don't think they realize, opens the door for topics that are, I think, more critical that they will not discuss, like the disproportionately rising number of black women coming down with HIV. Because of the down low activity, they won't discuss gay issues within within the black community or within the black Christian community, unless it has to do with putting down gay marriage, where their lives at stake. They just don't want to discuss it.
Well, and that's the tragedy, and that was my original question. Why is it that oppressed people very often become oppressors? And you know, I think the psychobabble answer is that oppressed people are familiar with oppression, and oppression sometimes gives them an opportunity to feel the power that is the reciprocal of the powerlessness that they felt. But I don't want to hyperanalyze this thing, but the fact of the matter is that in the African American community, there is a lower tolerance for gays. I've known gay African Americans who are very concerned about being trashed by people, far more concerned about being trashed, I mean physically beaten up by people in their own community than by whites. And I think that has to do with it being a historically oppressed community. Anyhow, Mike, I got to run. We got a whole board full of calls here. Ven in driving in Pennsylvania. Hey, Ven.
This is Ben. I'm driving a truck. You had a minister on not too long ago.
Yep.
And he was talking about gays getting married and carrying on. My thing is that I've never seen a gay that produced another gay. All gays, to me, were produced by heterosexuals. And I think we don't want to acknowledge that fact that we, as heterosexuals, produce these people. And then, as far as marriage is concerned, marriage, it was said in the Bible that God created Eve as a helpmate for Adam. It didn't say that he didn't give her a wife, he didn't give him a wife, and he didn't give him her, it didn't say anything about marriage. It said he just created a helpmate for her.
Well, in fact, in the Old Testament, the way that you legally divorced your wife was by taking her sandals and putting them outside the house.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you know, if you want to get into the technicalities of it, Ben, but yeah, it's pretty strange stuff. Philip in Seattle. Hey, Philip.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah,
up?
On the guest you just had a while ago.
Yeah.
Being a choice, I'm 53 and I'm gay, and who'd want to be teased, tormented, beaten up, and even killed?
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, exactly. And what's so strange, Philip, is that you've got a whole bunch of straight, mostly white guys out there, well, apparently in the African community too, African-American community as well, who think that folks are out evangelizing for being gay, and that people are going to say, "Oh, this sounds like fun. I think I'll become part of a subculture that regularly gets the bejesus kicked out of them." You know?
Yeah, and also when they say that it's, you know, in the Bible that gays and lesbians shouldn't be married, up until the 12th century, we were allowed to get married in churches. And even in the Vatican, so, mm-hmm. And it's, I saw a special, I just don't remember the name of it, but there was a gay man that did research and found out gays and lesbians were married back then in the church.
Yeah, in the Catholic Church, and in a number of other traditions as well.
Mm-hmm.
Philip, thanks for sharing that with us. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. Walter in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Walter.
Yes, hello, Tom. There's two things I'd like to discuss with you, if you don't mind. The first of which being the perception of gays in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that a big part of the intolerance is that a lot of black people find it offensive when the fight for gay rights is compared with the 60s and 70s fights for civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
That
gays have not been slaves in the United States. They've been oppressed,
offensive.
But they've not been slaves.
But exactly. That is very much why it's offensive.
Yeah.
And that no one really knows you're gay unless you allow them to. People who have eyes can tell that you are a member of whatever race it is you belong to, unless you're one of those people who belong to multiple races.
Mm. No, good point.
The other thing that I'd like to take issue with you on is the number of Ten Commandments that are enshrined in law.
Okay.
We have laws against killing, laws against stealing,
right.
And laws against bearing false witness against our neighbors. We call that perjury.
That's yes and no. I mean, I can bear false witness against my neighbors all day long. If I don't do it under oath, it's not perjury.
If you don't do it under oath, if you merely speak it, that's libel. There's a law against that too.
If I tell my wife that she looks great in that dress and I don't think it's true, have I, you know, technically I've broken the biblical law. Have I broken a legal law?
You've kind of bared false witness for your neighbor in that case, as opposed to against her. If you tell your wife something.
All right. I'll tell you what. I'll split that one with you 50-50, Walter.
And I've got another one.
Okay.
Well, this is kind of a two-part thing. It's adultery and coveting thy neighbor's wife.
Right.
It's not in every state, but in many states we have laws that are called alienation of affection, where it's a civil tort if you follow through on your coveting of your neighbor's wife and take it to the point where you do commit adultery.
Yeah, and it used to be actually a crime in most states. Adultery used to be a crime in most states and isn't much any longer. That's one that's changing as society changes.
Oh, absolutely. That is definitely true, that it's not quite the big deal that it was, but in many states we do still have alienation of affection.
Yeah, okay.
So one can make the argument that you've got four.
Okay, I'll give you two halves. How's that?
All right.
Walter, thanks a lot for the call. Good, a good point, though, about, you know, you can see who's African-American, for example. You can't necessarily see who's gay. But still, you know, if somebody's, you know, being able to be married is a little different than being able to live in a community or have a job. 45 minutes past the hour.
Rubber stamp.
Have you had enough?
The wire tap.
If you've had enough, then it's time to throw the rascals out.
Indeed, it is definitely time to throw the rascals out. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy, the Tom Hartman radio program. Just a quick heads up, Hacking Democracy, an HBO special, going to be playing on November 2nd. And this is actually a friend of mine, Earl Katz, put this thing together. It's a brilliant piece. We previewed it at Bioneers last week. And this is tell everybody you know to be watching HBO on November 2nd for this. Later on in the program, at the top of the next hour, Mike Stark is going to be with us. He's the guy who was tackled to the ground by George Allen's security forces yesterday in Virginia when he tried to ask George Allen, why did you spit on your first wife? And he also asked George Allen, why don't you just resolve all these questions about your arrest record by making them public? And for that, most of you have probably seen the video. He got basically beat up by George Allen's security guys while George Allen stood there and didn't make any attempt to stop them. He's going to be on as a guest at the beginning of the next hour. And then in our third hour, Congressman George Miller from the 7th District of California will be with us. And Larry Scott from VAWatchdog.org will be talking about what's going on with John Kerry. We'll be yes, that story is continuing. Mark Crispin Miller just sent me a note saying that he has confirmed that in Texas, at least, and apparently in most other states, there is no law against walking into the voting booth with a camera. So you can take a picture of the touch screen, and in particular, if you see something odd, like, hey, I voted for Joe, and now it says I voted for Ralph, you can take pictures of that stuff. And so take a camera with you to the polls. Sounds like a plan. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Jerry in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Tom?
Yeah.
I want to try to give a knockdown argument against this claim that people choose the gay lifestyle.
Right.
If you think back when we were in high school, we didn't choose to be heterosexuals. What we chose to do is to try to study instead of being completely captivated by the girls.
Yeah.
So when somebody tells me that, well, they chose a heterosexual lifestyle, I'm thinking they're not heterosexual because
yeah.
we did not choose it.
Yeah, you're right. And therefore you don't choose to be gay.
Yeah, and you won. Yeah, you know, that's right. And the gays had the same experience, different focus.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering about all this choosing stuff. I think there's too much revealing themselves there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well said, Jerry. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well said, Jim in Blackwood, New Jersey. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was up the weekend up in Hamilton, Ontario area. I'm driving around trying to get back on the freeway. I couldn't make a left turn, so I go through a residential neighborhood, real nice neighborhood. I see two guys holding hands. One's probably mid-50s, one's probably in their 40s. I realize they're a gay couple. They're probably married. And the Republic is still standing up there. They've had gay marriage in Canada now for like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. Well, I lived in Vermont for 10 years. And in the middle of that 10 years was when the Vermont Supreme Court said that the Vermont Constitution, their reading of the Vermont Constitution requires either gay marriage or civil unions in Vermont, and they said that the legislature figure it out. It was essentially the same thing the New Jersey Supreme Court said last week.
I think it's everything in Canada. I think it's every province, all nationwide.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is nationwide. But what happened in Vermont was really interesting because all the right-wing nuts came out, and they were just hysterical. And there were these, billboards, take back Vermont, all over the state. A lot of people who came to visit thought that meant buy some maple syrup and take it home with you. But it was this whole anti-gay crusade, and they were on the right-wing talk show hosts, and they were all predicting that if Vermont got civil unions, which is what Howard Dean ended up suggesting, what the legislature came up with and Dean signed into law, that if we got civil unions in Vermont, it would be the end of Vermont, it would be an economic disaster, the ski resorts would go broke because nobody would want to come visit because there'd be all those gay people there, good heavens. And what happened was, and it's been, what, about 5 years now, I think, since Vermont had got civil unions, what happened is that there are a couple of communities that have really embraced this, and they've actually seen increases in business because they have, they cater to gay weddings or civil unions, they kind of look like weddings. And that's it. There's been no other fallout other than a small increase in economic activity in some areas.
One more thing, Tom. I stopped at the Girl Guide stores, including the Girl Scouts up there. They're cooking and stuff. I took some back to the States as gifts to my friends. Mm-hmm. I was talking to the manager there. I looked up the Scouts in Canada, Cohen at all levels. I told her about the contribution of gays with the Boy Scouts in America, and she was kind of surprised.
Yeah.
She would say, whatever you do in private, should be your business. Just don't touch the kids.
Yeah. Well, the Canadians have a whole, they're a lot more tolerant than we are, and a lot of them are looking at us going, boy, these guys are really strange. They're really strange. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Donnie in Eugene, Oregon, KOPT. Hey, Donnie, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind, Donnie?
I'm thinking about gay marriage. You had that guy on earlier, and what confuses me is that you can get married in a church, you can get married in a synagogue, in a mosque, you can even get married on a ship by a captain, but if you want to get divorced, you have to go to the courthouse and stand before a judge, right. Which means that marriage is a legal contract, not a religious institution. So,
well, the problem is it's both. And that's because you can get married in a church, but if you don't file a certificate of marriage with the state and if you don't get a permit for marriage in the first place, that marriage is not legal.
Well, yeah, but which means that the most important element of the marriage is the legal contract. It's
exactly.
Getting a certificate by the state, which
exactly.
Means
so you can have, so what we need to have are secular marriages, which we already have. You get married by a justice of the peace, no religious component at all, and religious marriages. And some churches will choose to recognize gay marriages. I believe the United Church of Christ has. The Lutherans are debating it, at least one of the synods. And you could have, non-religious marriages. But, you know, it's what we're talking about here is whether people in a committed relationship should have the rights of marriage.
But you certainly can't, I don't even know if you can hear me anymore, can't get divorced. In a church, you have to get divorced in a courthouse.
Well, unless you're Catholic. If you're Catholic, you have to get divorced in the church, too. They have to annul it. But that's a whole other thing. But, yeah, good point. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Mike Stark, the guy that George Allen's goons tackled, will be with us right after the news. Stick around. The Tom Hartman radio program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting for a Change in America.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
So your United States senator is giving a talk and, doing his little stump speech thing, and you drop by to hear what he has to say, and he finishes, and you ask him a question, and in the middle of your question, you discover yourself being dragged away. Hustled off, slammed to the floor. Sound bizarre? Well, it actually happened to Mike Stark. Mike Stark, who also happens to run a blog called CallingAllWingnuts.com. Mike Stark, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hey, Mike, you are a Virginian. You're a student at the University of Virginia. You live in Virginia. Mr. Allen, George Allen, is your senator. You are a constituent, right?
Everything's correct. That's right.
Okay, so what happened yesterday?
I went to his event. He announced it on his website the night before. Just kind of serendipitously happened upon his schedule and decided that I'd show up at his event and ask him a couple of questions that had been pressing on my mind. I waited through all the speeches. He got done giving his speech.
So you did not heckle
him?
So you did not heckle him? I mean, you've been portrayed in the media as a heckler. You did not interrupt any of his speeches.
Yeah, that crazy media. No, I did not interrupt any of the speeches. I waited until the speeches were over, and as he was leaving the stage, doing the constituent relations thing, handshakes and baby kisses and small talk, when he got to be about 3 or 5 feet away from me, I said, "Senator Allen, the Democrats have made this election largely about accountability. You can shut them up by telling us what you were arrested for back in the 1970s. Because I knew he had sealed arrest records, or there's records of the arrest, but nobody says what the charges are.
Right.
So he just kind of looked down and muttered and looked to the side, and immediately I just started being shoved all over the place. People, I guess, saw it as their duty to keep me away from the senator and asking any more questions. So I did the best I could to stand my ground and keep pace with the senator, and I said, well, you don't want to answer that question. Can you say whether or not there's any truth to the allegations that you spit on or otherwise assaulted your first wife?" And by this time, we had spilled out the main door of the ballroom where he gave his speech, and we're out into the lobby. And now all his supporters are really, really mad at me, and one of them turns around and got in my face, and within 15 seconds, you know, he's wrestling me to the ground. He's got me in a headlock, and he's tackling me all while I'm trying to get my question answered by Senator Allen. He's running down a hallway, and I shouted after him, "Senator Allen, can you at least tell me if it's true if you spit on your wife?" And, you know, the next thing, I'm on the ground, and then out the door.
And that it's interesting, that last bit, which is the most physical, I suppose the most theatrical part of it from television's point of view, is basically the only part that gets shown on TV. And it does make you look at that point like this didn't start out as a civil conversation.
Yeah, there's so much criticism of the media to be had here. The conversation was civil. The conversation consisted of pointed questions that the senator found uncomfortable. But you don't go into public life if you're not comfortable fielding pointed questions.
Yeah.
Listen, these things are talked about all over the place. He made Jim Webb's record regarding women a big issue in this campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to escape responsibility for his own record because he's able to pay his wife some money and seal the divorce records. That's just not fair. There's just a basic level of fairness lacking in that equation, and I wanted to rectify it. Now, I had found some success earlier because, you know, in late August, I had traveled out to Stanton to a campaign event of George Allen's and asked him if he had ever used the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
And he denied it. He said he had never done it before in his life, and then 6 weeks later, the media caught up to me and ended up digging out a whole bunch of people that said, yes, he had indeed used the N-word. So that, I guess, is what I'm trying to do here. You know, the media had no problem reporting on rumors and rumors of scandals and innuendo when the subject was a blue dress and Bill Clinton. Well, here you have hard evidence of sealed divorce records. You have arrest records you can look at, and nobody's asking him any questions about this. Well, I want our media to do a better job, and I want accountability from my senator.
Yeah. So basically, what you're trying to do, we're talking with Mike Stark, who is a citizen of Virginia, a registered voter in Virginia, a constituent of George Allen's, who asked two civil questions of Senator Allen yesterday. Number one, why don't you just shut up the Democrats by releasing your arrest records so that they can't use that as an issue anymore? And number two, is it true that you assaulted or spit on your first wife? And for asking these two questions, Mike was wrestled to the ground, as most of us have probably seen on television by now. Mike, your hope is that these questions will now be asked by, you know, a David Gregory type, you know, a quote, real reporter. Is that, you know, what you're trying to do? Move the discourse into the out of the receiving line and into the news?
Yeah, I think that'd be a great result of this. I also want people to take note that, you know, George Allen could have stopped the physical assault that took place at any time. The physical assault actually took place inside the ballroom. That's when all the pushing and shoving first took place. That's when hands were first laid upon me, and I told them that I didn't want them touching me. You know, George Allen could have said, you know what? I'm going to lead here. I'm going to be a leader. Stop that. This is my campaign. We don't behave that way in this campaign. But the fact is, that is the way George Allen behaves. He is a bully. We've seen it with the Macaca incident. And if you've read anything at all about his background, you know it's a troubled background. And, you know, bullying is his way of getting things done, I guess.
Yeah, this is the guy who had the lynching noose hanging in his office for years and years next to the Confederate stars and bars, the battle flag.
That's right. I mean, he's got horrible problems with racial bullying, and you know, his sister wrote this long book with some just absolutely despicable stories about George Allen dragging her upstairs by her hair when it was bedtime and taking great delight in inflicting pain. And, you know, he's got this genial manner, but I don't think he's a very honest person. I don't think he's a good person. In fact, I think he's a bad man. I mean, we talk about the Confederate flag thing, and he said it's all about, you know, it's all about heritage. Well, he grew up surfing in Southern California, and I don't know anybody that gloms on to a heritage that involves, you know, the controversy that you know, the Confederacy involved.
Yeah. At what age did George Allen move from Southern California, where he grew up, to Virginia? Do you know?
I believe he moved here to go to college. He started at the at UVA when his father got the job with the Washington Redskins, and I believe he was a freshman in college when he moved here.
So he really did grow up in Southern California as a surfer kid.
He was.
Which was not part of the Confederacy, as I recall.
Well, you know, I don't want to say what he actually said, but I'll try to paraphrase it. He said he when he came to Virginia, his classmates are on record as saying that he said that he moved to Virginia because it's a place where the know their place. I mean,
the word for African Americans.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Know their place. So, and then there were race baiting incidences that took place at his high school. Evidently, there was a high school football game, and his suburban team was playing the only majority black high school, and he showed up early at school and painted "Kill Whitey" and all sorts of race baiting slogans in graffiti on his school walls.
On his own school.
And you know what? He confesses to that. Uh-huh. Unbelievably, that's one thing he's taking responsibility for.
Well,
I'm sorry?
Good on him for owning up to it, I guess. I'm surprised that, you know, I mean, I'm a pretty good observer of the media, and I've never heard that story. I'm surprised that it's not more widely known.
Well, I have a feeling we know why he owned up to it. I have a feeling he owned up to it because there was no refuting it. There was actual evidence of it. And he didn't actually own up to it as much as he said, you know, I did things when I was a kid that I wish I hadn't have done.
Well, I suppose on some level that's true of all of us.
That's absolutely true.
But, I guess the question is, right now, how is he conducting himself? And like you say, he could have, like John Kerry did, for example, when he was running for president. There were hecklers who showed up regularly, and occasionally people in the crowd would try to take them out, and Kerry would say, no, stop, they have a right to be here, too. As opposed to the Bush campaign, where anybody who even looked like they might have the wrong bumper sticker on their car got shuttled off to the free speech zone.
Yeah, you talk about the Bush campaign, and I was kind of laughing earlier because I was extrapolating this kind of incident too. I mean, imagine if, George Bush, every time he got a tough question from Helen Thomas.
Yeah, there you go. If every time George Bush got a tough question from Helen Thomas, he had her dragged out of the room, I don't think it'd last very long. Mike Stark, calling all wingnuts.com, his blog. Mike, thanks for being with us today here on the Tom Hartman program. 16 minutes past the hour.
Yes, it's true, he's been lying to you. You were bound to find out someday. He will do what he thinks he must do. He's a spoiled boy that's getting his way. And in the anger that's sure to come, you may even hate the place he comes from. Please don't blame it all on Texas.
No, it wouldn't be fair.
For his low-down ways.
Yeah, because he was actually born in Connecticut and raised in Massachusetts. Don't blame it on Texas. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Raw Story, Larissa Alexandrova reporting over at Raw Story today. Leaked Cheney to make fun of Kerry in remarks today. The sound bites will be out tonight. As released to the reporter pool, Cheney's one-liner is going to be, Kerry was the joke, was for the joke before he was against it. Yeah. And so we'll see how this thing all shakes out, but it's getting pretty strange. It's getting pretty strange. I talked to two members of Congress this morning about this whole thing with John Kerry, and pretty much I think most of the Democrats just kind of hope it will go away because it's really a distraction from the real issues. On the other hand, my take on it is that Kerry could have cleaned it up if he would just speak simply. He would just, first of all, yeah, he misspoke. You know, he said, in fact, I've got the audio of it here. This is, everybody is playing this, so, you know, what the heck.
Education. If you make the most of it, and you study hard, and you do your homework, and you make an effort to be smart, you can do well. If you don't, you get stuck in Iraq.
Yeah, and he meant you get us stuck in Iraq. And the thing that's missing is from that clip, because that's the clip that all the mainstream media are playing, is the two and three sentences before it in which he kept talking about Bush this, Bush that, Bush this. And then, you know, he's speaking at a college. And, you know, his point basically was that Bush wasn't paying attention. He wasn't doing his homework. He wasn't taking care of business. He wasn't doing the things that a good student should do. And therefore, we went into Iraq totally unprepared. Now, if Kerry, in his rebuttal, instead of saying,
the media knew and the Bush administration knew that I was speaking of the president and not of the troops.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that a lot of Americans knew that simply because of the way the media handled it by taking this little clip out of context. So instead, what he should have done is rephrased it. He should have simply said, you know, what I meant to say and what I thought I did say was that Bush was acting like a lousy student in getting us into Iraq. He was acting like somebody who doesn't pay attention, didn't do his lessons, and frankly, I question the guy's competence. I mean, it should have just been, you know, Joe Sixpack language rather than well, in any case, I don't. But I on the other hand, I'm not critical of Senator Kerry. He does things the way he does them, and. I think it's a tempest in a teapot. He has now, on the Don Imus show, come out and said, I blew it. I mean, here's the clip.
And it was my inclination to try to defend you in this. And I said, I think I know what he meant. I mean, it's clear what he meant. But I had to acknowledge in my conversation with Charles that that's not what you said. So,
no, of course it is what I said.
Well,
no,
I left out
one word. I left out the word us. They got us stuck. Instead of that, I said they got stuck, and they're taking advantage of it. And here's what's wrong.
Well, why not apologize for the misunderstanding?
Well, I did. I said it was a botched joke. Of course I'm sorry about a botched joke. You think I love botched jokes? I mean, you know, it's pretty stupid.
So there's Kerry saying, yes, I'm sorry, and it's pretty stupid. One hour later, after Kerry has said that, Tony Snow comes out and says, and I quote, all you have to do is say, I apologize, I said something, it came out wrong, I'm sorry. And instead, what Senator Kerry has done is he's tried to whip this up into a big thing. You get how weird this is? I mean, these guys, they will attack on anything. It's all about attack. It's all about attack. 1-866-440-8466. Peter, Brattleboro, Vermont. Hey, Peter, what's on your mind today?
Hi, it's Peter.
Hey, Peter.
Your show is excellent. I really love it. You and Stephanie are my two favorites on the radio.
Thank you.
And I didn't realize you were a Vermonter. I just heard that on your show.
Yeah, well, I'm not quite. I mean, I lived there for 10 years. I think you have to have been born there to really be a Vermonter. You know?
Where were you, Tom?
I lived in Northfield for 5 years, and I lived in downtown Montpelier for 5 years.
Oh, I love Montpelier.
It's a beautiful town.
Anyway, you must have read my mind while I was on hold, because yesterday, when this thing first happened with John Kerry, and I heard the soundbite of what he said, I mean, I'm a huge fan of his. He's a hero to me. He's a great patriot. He's my age. I protested at the Veterans Against the War to support the guys, and I'm rooting for him all the way, and I couldn't believe the way it came out, and I'm trying to figure out what did he mean. I couldn't figure it out, and I didn't hear anyone explain the joke yesterday until I finally kind of got it, but it's like nobody's explained this enough, like you just said, in six-pack talk.
Yeah, and that's what Kerry needs to do. He needs to just come out and say, you know, this president really screwed this thing up, and not say it in senator speak and not say it in all the polite language. Peter, thank you for the call. Well said. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, exposing the con and conservative.
I got news of the very best kind about troubles that are falling behind about people that used to be blind till they open up their eyes and see. It's news when they begin to ask why they're poor until the day that they die they're tired of pie in the sky and they want some security. And it's news, news, ain't that news, ain't that something to see. News, news, you talk about the news, it's mighty good news to me.
Hey, welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Telling the truth, the multinational corporations would really rather you weren't all that aware of. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a couple of quick emails here. This one from, this is actually posted on our forums over at TomHartmann.com on our message board from a person in Oregon, in Salem, Oregon. Tonight I was calling to get out the vote for a local candidate. One of the other callers came to us with some disturbing news. Three different elderly ladies identified as Democrats had been called by someone who told them it was too late to vote. They had missed the deadline. One of the ladies had been ready to throw her ballot in the trash. What should be thrown in the trash are unethical, amoral people who are out to bypass democracy, these mini Karl Rove spawn of the Republican cheat machine. So apparently here in Oregon, where we have vote by mail, and there is some confusion, frankly, about when you have to mail your ballot in, because it has to be received by Tuesday the 7th, which means you can't mail it on Tuesday. If your ballot is filled out and you haven't mailed it by Tuesday, it really, even mailing it by Monday, you're risking it. If you haven't mailed it by Tuesday, you have to go down and physically turn it in. So apparently somebody here in Oregon, where we have vote by mail, it's entirely vote by mail. There are no voting machines. There's no polling places. There are drop-off spots where you can drop off your ballot if you want, because you get it in the mail. But apparently somebody is calling Democrats. And when they find registered Democrats, and when they find elderly registered Democrats, telling them that the date has passed after which it is too late to mail in your ballot. And so don't bother. Incredible. And here's another one. This is from North Carolina. This is from the Democratic Party of North Carolina. It's Halloween, and we're not surprised that the Republicans are up to their dirty tricks. Yesterday, we received various complaints about deceptive Republican tactics during the early voting in Chapel Hill. Apparently, Republican canvassers are approaching people entering the polls and asking if they're Democrats. If the answer is yes, they're given a flyer and told, "This is a list of our judicial candidates." The problem, the list contains only the Republican candidates. And because party affiliation is not listed on the ballot, these are nonpartisan judicial races, voters are being misled. Incredible. And then they say, okay, here's the actual Supreme Court and Court of Appeals candidates that are being supported by the Democratic Party, even though they're not Democrats. We cannot assume this is an isolated incident, and we will not assume that this is the only trick that they'll try in order to win. Voter intimidation, fear tactics, vote fraud, and litigation, litigating elections all come to mind. Yeah. And this from a friend who's an astrologer. Actually, via a friend. This is from a friend via a friend. It originated apparently with a guy by the name of Joe Branter in Pittsburgh, although maybe he got it from somebody else, because it says, thanks to reader John Dawson for alerting me to this. In the middle of Mercury retrograde, which is happening right now, Mercury went retrograde on the 29th of October. It goes direct on the 18th of November. This is the period of time, it happens three or four times a year, every year, when it just seems like anything that can go wrong will, particularly if it has to do with communications or mechanical things, right? And I'm not an astrologer, and I don't know squat about astrology, but I remember I first learned about this, must have been 15 years ago. The publisher, one of my first publishers, the owner of a relatively small publishing company out of California. I mean, you know, they've sold millions of books, but it's a small company. And the publisher, the guy who owns the company, when Mercury goes retrograde, literally will not answer his phone. And absolutely refuses to sign contracts when Mercury is retrograde. Will not do it, because anything that's started, anything that's signed when Mercury is retrograde, he believes is doomed to failure. And I've since learned that this is how Ronald Reagan conducted his presidency, that whenever Mercury went retrograde, you know, three, four times a year throughout those 8 years, that Reagan would not sign contracts, he would not engage in negotiations. You know, now the upside of Mercury retrograde is it's a good time to be introspective, to go inside, to think about things and all that. But anyhow, it's a bad time to try and do anything mechanical, anything you have to do with communications. And so in the middle of the Mercury retrograde is the election coming up next week. And he says Mercury aligns exactly with the sun in an eclipse of Mercury. The last time this happened was May 2003. Remember, mission accomplished? I'm concerned about major Mercury aspects occurring near Election Day in the U.S. The 2000 election occurred on a day Mercury changed direction. The anticipated widespread use of electronic voting machines and the validity of their results may be an issue. This is from an astrologer who's not about political, you know, one side or the other, but isn't that interesting? Strange stuff out there. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Tom.
Hi. Hey, on this Kerry thing, it seems like the only one that gets this in the media on the left and the right is Keith Olbermann. Everybody, even Al Franken and everyone I hear on the left today keeps saying it was a botched joke. That's all they said. They don't finish with the last two words of that.
About Bush.
About Bush. Yeah. Well, why can't, and Olbermann kept saying it last night, and by the way, tonight he's going to do a special commentary on this whole thing.
Yeah.
So everybody should tune in. But why can't even the liberals say it was a joke about Bush?
Yeah, well, you know, you've heard it here a few times, Tom, so it's...
I know, but they keep, when they just say a botched joke, everybody assumes the joke was about the troops. No,
right.
It was about Bush, and you got to keep saying about Bush, the
yeah.
deserter Bush, the chicken hawk Cheney, the, I mean, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's, and my only criticism of John Kerry is that he didn't say that in a very simple, very direct, very six-pack way early on.
Although
and,
last night he did, on his quick response, he got pretty...
Yeah, he got pretty outspoken, but he did it again in, you know, polysyllabic, multiple sentences fashion, you know.
I didn't hear it. But.
No, it really needed to be a six-pack statement. It needed to be, this Bush guy screwed things up. And I might have screwed up the joke, but he screwed up America, he screwed up this country, he screwed up the war in Iraq, and that's what I was talking about. I was
right.
talking about Bush being an incompetent student of the history of Iraq, and that's how he got us stuck in Iraq. I mean, why couldn't he just say it like that? That's,
did he say again the joke, or did he end it with about Bush? He didn't even say that. Oh my!
No, he. You know, he came out swinging. I mean, you know, for John Kerry, it was actually damn good. But it's you know, and I'm not being critical of him. I'm you know, because you know he's who he is, and he's got to do
funny.
The
even
he does.
The,
it's
even
just
the
that's how I would have done it. That's all.
Even liberals like Al Franken and I think it was Sam Cedar, they keep saying the botched joke, and they don't finish the sentence about saying about Bush.
Well, I'm sorry, I have no control over them and their programs, Tom. But you're going to get the about Bush here.
In a country, I cannot believe we are like a nation of adolescent juvenile. It's just amazing.
Yeah, well, some of us, I think, are grown-ups. And hopefully more of us will become that way. Tom, thanks for the call. I got to move along. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Rick.
How are
listening
you?
On WTKG there, Clear Channel in Grand Rapids. What's up?
Well, I first saw this story actually on the Internet, and I thought if it had been originally the way everybody thinks it was, I mean, isn't it quite apparent that either with the draft or with the volunteer army that a lot of young people without any economic prospects do go into the army for an education and job training, and then once they're in, of course, they can be sent into a war.
Well, that's the problem, is that had the joke, the botched joke about Bush been a botched joke about the troops, there is enough of a germ of truth to that side of it that it's very easy for everybody to jump to that conclusion. And it's just like one of those, you know, those things that you just don't talk about, you know, out loud kind of thing.
Well,
and so that's why Bush and everybody else is having so much fun beating up on this guy. And get this, Rick. Kerry this morning, 4 or 5 hours ago, apologized, said, I'm sorry, on Don Imus. I played the clip here. So an hour later, Tony Snow comes out and says, why won't he apologize? And now this just came out, this on Fox News, John Boehner saying that, or excuse me, Boehner saying that, or Bonner, however you say it, he's going to beat John Kerry to death with this thing. Here, catch this.
How long will this Kerry explosion last? It's only a few days to election day.
Maybe long enough.
I mean, you really think it's a 4 or 5 day story?
Well, if he's not going to apologize, we're going to beat him to death until he does.
And you know, note to John Boehner, he already has.
But the thing is about these people, and they've even unmuzzled Liz Cheney. They've been keeping her quiet for about 5 years, and I guess they got nothing to lose now. But how many of these people complaining about this were in the military?
Yeah.
They always, you know, it's bad enough to hide behind the flag. Now they're hiding behind the troops and claiming that they want to protect the troops, and we can't say anything to even remotely insult them. But these folks were never in the military.
Yeah.
They loved the military so much they were never in it.
Yep. Well said, Rick. Well said. Dave in Sacramento, California. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Well, I have your book in my hand here, and I finished reading it, and I have nothing to say except good things about it, as a matter of fact.
You talking about Screwed?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I wish it were required reading for, you know, history majors, college-wise, and maybe even high school. I think he did a great job on it, especially anchoring it to, you know, our founding fathers.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate your kind words, and thanks also for listening to us on KSAC. Right now it's time for Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman Program's Progressive Pop Quiz. Today's question is, John Kerry is being criticized for making a joke about the troops when, in fact, he was making a joke about whom? Or should that be who? In any case, the sixth caller with the correct answer, and who can tell us whether it should be who or whom, at 1-866-440-THOM, 1-866-440-8466, gets an autographed copy of my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. The answer coming up right after the break, 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Harbin here with you.
And I won't.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 9 minutes before the hour, coming up on it. We have a winner in our progressive pop quiz. Our question for the day, John Kerry's being criticized for making a joke about the troops when, in fact, he was making a joke about whom? And congratulations to Lee Botel of Eugene, Oregon, listening on KOPT. And there comes our applause, indeed. Good on you, Lee. Lee knew that the correct answer is George W. Bush. John Kerry was making a joke about George W. Bush. Victoria Jones, and Lee wins a copy of, an autographed copy of Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, our senior jokester correspondent on the line with us. Hey, Victoria from Washington, D.C.
Yes, hey, the joke continues in the White House gaggle this morning and in the White House press briefing as the deputy press secretary, first of all, and then the White House press secretary, the stuffed suit himself, attempted, and he's not stuffed very much because he's a very lean man, attempted to rise above the fray and to give the impression that they're very reluctant to engage in all this, that, you know, they really wish that this hadn't kind of happened.
Well, Kerry apologized on the Don Imus show this morning. An hour later, he said, I'm sorry, shouldn't have said that. Because Imus says, why don't you just apologize? He says, yeah, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. It was stupid. Those are the exact words that John Kerry said. Did you hear that clip, by the way?
I haven't heard the clip, but I've seen the transcript.
Yeah. So, in fact, here, I can play it for you if you'd like to hear it.
Yeah, I'd like to hear it.
Okay, here we go.
It was my inclination to try to defend you in this, and I said, I think I know what he meant. I mean, it's clear what he meant, but I had to acknowledge in my conversation with Charles, that's not what you said. So
of course it isn't what I said.
Well,
no,
I left out
one word. I left out the word us. They got us stuck. And instead of that, I said they got stuck, and they're taking advantage of it. And here's what's wrong.
Well, why not apologize for the misunderstanding?
Well, I did. I said it was a botched joke. Of course I'm sorry about a botched joke. You think I love botched jokes? I mean, you know, it's pretty stupid.
So Kerry comes out and says, I'm sorry, it was pretty stupid. An hour later, Tony Snow says, why doesn't he just apologize? John Boehner, just now on Fox, says we're going to, I mean, this is pretty incredible. Here's Boehner.
A story? Well, if he's not going to apologize, we're going to beat him to death until he does.
Now, that was just like 15, 20 minutes ago.
And they are going to, and the reality is that the apology that he made for the botched joke is not going to be sufficient.
It never is.
But he could apologize if what he said has been misinterpreted as hurting the troops.
Yeah.
That's all he needs to say, Tom.
Yeah.
It's just simple PR 101. I've done crisis PR. I understand how this works. And I can tell you, he's handling it wrong.
Interesting. What about his saying, it was a joke about Bush? Why don't you guys get it? This was a joke about Bush, not about the troops. Why can't that point be hammered home? Because that's really what was going on.
Because the difficulty with that is because the clip that the entire country has heard has no mention of the word Bush in it.
Right, because they didn't hear the two sentences that preceded the joke.
Right, exactly. And so it's too late to try and say that. Unless he can get the transcript out. if he can get the sound out, and I'm interested to know why don't they have the sound out?
Why doesn't Kerry have the sound out? Well, the sound, the whole clip is out. I mean, yesterday Chris Matthews played the whole clip, including the setup where he was attacking Bush. I mean, on Hardball, Chris Matthews made it really obvious that Kerry was attacking Bush, and then he played Bush, taking offense at it, and played Tony Snow taking offense at it, and they looked absurd. But he was the only guy who did that, as far as I could tell. I didn't see Olbermann yesterday. Apparently, he also pointed it out that it was a joke about Bush, but nobody else did.
No, and they're not going to, because it's easy. It's too easy. But he could defuse this. If he were to do what I'm suggesting, and I'm not suggesting this because, I think he necessarily should do it. I'm just saying this is the smart PR thing to do. Once he does that, once he does this particular kind of apology, any attack that's made on him after that is gratuitous. And is seen, they're gratuitous anyway, but they're then seen to be gratuitous.
Yeah. In other words, he's going to have to eat crow in order to put it into
his
suit.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
He is.
Well, that's a tough one for a guy who, was putting up with all of the whole Swift boat thing, and, he's, geez.
I know, and he's decided to fight this one like he should have fought the Swift boats.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
fascinating.
It is, and what's fascinating is to see the Republicans play this thing like a fiddle, and how the media has just fallen right into line with them.
Well, let me say two things. One is get out the vote drive. This is a massive get out the vote drive for the Republicans, and this could change the result of the election, in my opinion. And the second thing is
really the Kerry comment.
Yes, I do believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is that I can tell you that the press is sick and tired of it. There were a lot of comments after the briefing today. I said to somebody, oh, God, I wish this would go away. And one very, very prominent person turned around and said to me, 12 hours. And somebody else said to me that they were sick of it.
Yeah. So basically you think the press is going to drop it even if the Republicans try not to?
I think they might. I think that they kind of said there was a sense today that we were reaching, that there was a limit to how many legs this thing's had.
Yeah. Cheney apparently is going to give a speech about it tonight.
Yes, he is. And it's going to be vicious as hell.
Right. And apparently the leaked line is that Cheney's going to say he was for the joke before he was against it.
I think that'll be probably the most benign thing that he says.
Yeah. Amazing. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News correspondent, talkradionews.com. Victoria, thank you.
Thank you very much.
For being on the program with us today. 56 minutes past the hour. Coming up, George Miller, the congressman from the 7th District, representing the 7th District of California, is going to be with us about all things political. Larry Scott with VA Watchdog. And, of course, your calls we'll be getting to as we get toward the bottom of the next hour. 57 minutes past the hour, the pill that will help you escape the matrix, right here, the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. Our quote for the day from Abraham Lincoln, one of the few decent Republican presidents we had. If you once forfeit the confidence of your fellow citizens, you can never regain their respect and esteem. You may fool all of the people some of the time. You can even fool some of the people all of the time. But you can't fool all of the people all of the time. Had he known, he would have appended two words to the end of that. Mr. Bush. George Miller is with us, congressman from California, the 7th District of California. His website, house.gov/George Miller. And Congressman Miller, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, I understand that you're working with Nancy Pelosi's office and getting the word out about what America can expect if Democrats take a majority in the House of Representatives.
Well, we've made it very clear that we want to take the country in a new direction. The country has made it clear that they want to go in a different direction than the Bush administration, Republican Congress have taken them. So we've laid out the things that we want to do that first weekend in office as a beginning of a good faith showing of the differences between ourselves and the Republicans. We've made it very clear that we want to implement the 9/11 Commission, which is the gold standard for homeland security, the kinds of things that the Republicans have refused to do to make this country more secure. We've made it clear that we want to pass the minimum wage in the House immediately so that those people who have been working at a minimum wage that is 10 years old start to share in some of the economic growth in this nation. We've made it clear that we want to attack the problems of the increased cost of health care. The first thing we want to do is make sure that the federal government has the power to negotiate for lower prices on prescription drugs, something that the Republicans refused to do because they took all of that money from the big pharmaceutical companies. We want to cut the interest rates in half. The Republicans doubled the interest rates in this last session of Congress for those people borrowing money to go to college. We want to reduce the cost of that college. And we've made it very clear that we want an energy policy that speaks to the United States being energy independent in 10 years by investing in new fuels, new technologies, new innovations that are available to us today. But once again, the Republicans have chosen just to continue to give tax subsidies to the big oil companies to do what they were doing yesterday, which is not in the interest of America's energy future, not in our national security interest, and certainly not in the economic security interest of this country. So we've made a very clear, very specific agenda that is very different from what the Bush administration and the Republicans have stood for over these last 10 years.
Congressman George Miller, you've done a marvelous job in a very tight, concise way of encapsulating the 100-hour plan that Democrats are talking about coming into office.
Uh-huh.
A couple of questions just to by way of illuminating all of this stuff. For example, you suggested that you want the government to be able to negotiate directly with pharmaceutical companies for Medicare patients, like the Veterans Administration does right now, like General Motors probably. I mean, any company that operates its own insurance program, and there are a lot of big companies that do that. They all negotiate for pharmaceuticals. What about if that happens? What about all the money that the pharmaceutical companies are passing out through their lobbyists to Republican members of Congress and probably a few Democrats as well? And what about the enormous profits of the pharmaceutical companies and all the people who are invested in them?
There's no indication. There's no indication that the pharmaceutical companies do not make a profit when they sell their pharmaceuticals to the veterans.
No, I didn't mean to suggest that they don't. I was being semi-facetious.
They're going to argue that they don't. The fact of the matter is, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats have made it very clear we want to break the links between the lobbyist and the legislation. We cannot continue to have legislation as the pharmaceutical bill was, the prescription drug benefit bill was written in Tom DeLay's office with the lobbyists from the pharmaceutical companies, and it was given to the Congress and the public in the middle of the night. We've got to stop that kind of activity. We've got to stop the lobbyists from directing how the people's legislation will be done. Leader Pelosi has made it clear that she wants to deliver this House from the special interest to the people of this country. We now see Republican legislator after Republican congressman going to jail, resigning from office, being indicted because they chose to use their public offices to the benefit of their friends, their family, their business partners, their contributors, but never the people of this country.
Yeah. Congressman George Miller, you're great. Again, very, very clear. I guess the question behind my question is the Republican Party in the United States during the administration of Dwight Eisenhower, for example, frankly, I think if Dwight Eisenhower were alive today, he would be as quick to repudiate the Republican Party as Jim Jeffords was. Jim Jeffords, I used to live in Vermont and talked with Jim Jeffords, in fact, after he left the Republican Party. He said, I didn't leave the party left me.
Right.
And, I thought that was a very good summary of it. The Republican Party in the United States, at various times in its history, Teddy Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, has actually stood for some fairly reasonable things. And historically, there have been times when it's been very corrupt. There have been times when it wasn't so corrupt. How did it get so bad? I mean, basically everything that you listed, from the minimum wage to the student loans to Medicare, the STEM, all these things, in most cases what it boils down to is some special interest basically paying off members of Congress on the Republican side, and those Republicans then doing the bidding and frankly being paid thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, and in exchange for that these big corporations are making millions, billions, and in some cases tens of billions of dollars. How did it get so bad?
Got that way because the things that I just talked about, the increase in the minimum wage, the negotiation for drug prices, all have bipartisan support. But Tom DeLay hijacked the Republican Party. The conservatives and the right wing hijacked the Republican Party in the Congress. They marginalized the moderate Republicans, and they dealt with the lobbyists directly. Lobbyists were given business, and then they were expected to tithe, you know, money to the Republicans, to the Republican members, and it was simply a marketplace where money talked. And that what you see now is Republicans all over the country, independent voters, who are saying, that's not the Republican Party that I supported.
Right. But is there some ideology at work here, or is this just pure and simple greed?
It's just greed. It's absolutely greed. It was cloaked in ideology. They tried to use the faith-based community that now sees what was really taking place in terms of these special deals, this criminal activity, this immoral activity by Republican members of Congress, and then they cloaked themselves in the Christian right or the Christian coalition, these sorts of things. This was just greed. This was simply a power play by Tom DeLay, Jack Abramoff. Abramoff provided protection. Tom DeLay provided protection for Abramoff's clients, and they all took the money and ran. They, you know, you see Grover Norquist, Ralph Reed, Jack Abramoff, all of these people in collusion. And what was the common factor? They were making money. They were taking money. They were lying to their clients. They were lying to their contributors. They were lying to their parishioners. They were lying to their friends, and they ended up lying to the Justice Department.
Hmm. Yeah. We're talking with Congressman George Miller, representing the 7th District of California, his website, house.gov/George Miller, and about the agenda that the Democrats will be following if they take control of the House. Congressman Miller, we have about a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes here to go, and if you're still available, I'm just curious what you think the odds are that the Democrats will, in fact, take the House.
I think the Democrats are going to take the House. I think we see now the 15 seats that are necessary just to take the House, because what we see is that many Republicans, many independent voters in these districts are saying they do not want a continuation of this kind of corruption, of this kind of ethics. They want to go in a new direction. They want to go in a new direction on the economy. They want to go in a new direction clearly in Iraq. They're not going to stay the course with the president. They see that the disaster that it's been for our service people, for the country, for our world standing. And so those seats are there, and clearly many of the people who handicap these races are telling us that we can go beyond, well beyond those 15 seats. So it's very encouraging. It's not done yet. We all have great respect for the evilness of Karl Rove and what he can do in the last minute, and the president's running around the country desperately running from district to district now to try to tell the Republicans, give us one more chance, give us one more chance, we'll change, we'll do better. But the fact of the matter is, I think America's decided it's in the interest of this country to move on, to get rid of these people and have a new beginning that's based upon ethics, that's based upon civility, that's based upon a bipartisan cooperation across the aisles of the Congress to move this country forward.
So the Democrats would not exploit the Republicans the way that Republicans, or not exploit power the way the Republicans have.
Speaker Pelosi's made it very clear. We want to have the Congress return to civility, to bipartisanship, and to a very high ethical standard that we have not seen in the last 10 years.
Good on you. Congressman George Miller, representing the 7th, brilliantly representing the 7th District of California. Sir, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And good luck. Keep up the good work. 16 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, News Without Conflicts of Global Corporate Interest. We'll be right back. Welcome back to your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. We'll be getting back to your calls here at the bottom of the hour in just a few minutes. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room and say hello. Some of the finest minds on the entire Internet hanging out in there at this very moment. And Larry Scott with us. He's the chief cook and bottle washer, editor-in-chief at VAWatchdog.org, keeping an eye on the VA because somebody has to. Hey, Larry Scott.
Hi, Tom. And, oh, golly, was it good to hear Congressman George Miller of California on in the previous segment,
He was listening, trying to talk to the guys, like trying to take a sip out of a fire hose. You know, he really know how to do it. But, boy, very articulate.
And such great information, too. And I might point out for your listeners that in the Disabled American Veterans legislative agenda that we have posted on our voting page on VAWatchdog.org, he has been rated by the Disabled American Veterans for 2005 and 2006 based on his voting record for veterans, 100 and 100 for both of those years.
100%.
It doesn't get any better than that.
That's great to know. That's great to know, because I frankly didn't know much about him before we put him on. Well, it's a whole long story, but anyway, we really wanted to have somebody from the Democratic Party come on and say, this is what we're all about and what we intend to do, and he did a marvelous job. So over at VAWatchdog.org, I see your top item is Vote Pro-Veteran, and this is not about being a Republican or a Democrat, although I noticed that you do have three round buttons that say Vote, and you have two square things that say Vote Vet, and in every case you have stars with the top at the top and the two legs of the star at the bottom. In other words, right side up stars like we have on our flag, whereas the GOP logo has the stars upside down. So does that mean that you are Democratic?
Well, no, it just means that I know how to fly a star.
I see. Okay, there you go.
That's all. It's really very simple.
It's really very simple.
And I think somebody who's printing those stars upside down there every time we see an elephant should get with it.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little spooky.
But, you know, on the voting page, too, if I could point out, we've added the last time we talked, we just had the 2005 ratings from the Disabled American Veterans. They've just released their 2006 ratings. The numbers vary slightly. But the message is still the same. And there's another new a voting survey out, and that's by the IAVA, the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. This is Paul Rykoff's group.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a link to that. And I think it's something that your listeners would really be interested in looking at, because this has raised some kind of heck all over Washington, D.C. As you know, Paul Rykoff is a pretty high-profile person right now.
Yeah.
And what's happened is they have given, over the last 5 years, every member of Congress ratings, A, B, C, D, F, and this is based on not only veterans' issues, but on supporting active-duty military and our troops. Some very high-ranking people came up with bad grades, and what's happened is the reaction, especially from the Republicans who were rated low, they have turned into screaming memes. Let me give you an example, and that is Senator Larry Craig, a Republican of Idaho, who is the chairman of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, got a D-.
Whoa.
He was so incensed when the article about this voting survey came out in the Army Times magazine that he wrote a letter to the editor demanding that the Army Times print his letter in an equal space. And he went on and on how he supports the troops and so on and so forth. And basically, he just hemmed and hawed. But this is the type of anger that this survey is generating among those who have shown by their votes that they do not support our troops and do not support our veterans. It's a great survey to look at from Paul Rykoff and the IAVA.
These are nonpartisan groups, Larry Scott.
Yes.
And all you're looking at is did these guys vote to support the troops and to support vets, or did they not? In very tangible ways. This is not about ideology.
No.
And are you finding, when you look at these various surveys by these various veterans groups about who's supporting the troops and who's not, that there is a partisan breakdown?
There's a clear delineation. There's an absolutely clear delineation. No
and
matter
what is
if
that?
You use the IAVA or the Disabled American Veterans or the AMVETS, the American Veterans, and that is Democrats overwhelmingly support our troops and support our veterans with their votes, with the money to support them. The Republicans lag far, far, far behind, and in some cases, many Republicans on the DAV roster actually received zero ratings, which means they did not vote for one single piece of legislation that would support veterans. Remember, it's nice to say, I support someone, but when you vote for the legislation, you're putting aside money. You're taking money from the budget, and you're
putting money. But see, the Republicans, they have to keep some money for the tax cuts for the millionaires and billionaires.
I mean, it's just
really important. You know, if a few veterans get screwed, Larry, I mean, you got to understand the Republican priorities.
You know, I got to make a note of that. I had forgotten all about that. Maybe that's why it happened, Tom.
Yeah. No, I'm half serious. I mean, tragically, yep. That's really what's going on. Larry Scott, he's the editor over at VAWatchdog.org. You can read all about it there, along with any veterans news you want to find. You'll find it at VAWatchdog.org. Larry, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you again, Tom.
Great talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where being progressive never felt so good. And it's going to feel better.
If I told you once, must have told you twice. The last thing you're looking for is their advice. The truth be told, it's just a pack of lies. The last thing you're looking for is their advice.
Speaking of there, I understand Mr. Bush is speaking with Mr. OxyContin even as we speak. Or apparently was in the last segment. Folks in the chat room telling me about this. Very strange. Anyhow, you drop into our live chat room if you'd like, over to TomHartman.com and just click live chat and drop in and say hello. All kinds of cool stuff there. This just in from the Wall Street Journal 42 minutes ago. Citigroup Inc. may be close to a $3 billion deal to buy into China's Guangdong Development Bank, according to a person close to the situation. Man, first China takes all our jobs. Now they're going to become. I mean, if Citibank thinks they're going to own the biggest bank in China, I would bet. If I were a betting man, I'd probably bet money on it that within 5 years the situation will have reversed. You know, sort of like AOL buying Time Warner, and who thought? You know, who would have thought? Kind of thing. Anyhow, 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number. Mike in Indian Lake, Ohio. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind today?
Oh, there's a lot of things. I just want to say thanks for having Congressman Miller on. That was a nice segment. And being a vet, I'm definitely interested in those issues. But just want to say a quick thing on the Kerry thing, too. I think Victoria was right. Kerry does have to succinctly make an apology that he didn't disparage the troops in any way in his comments from yesterday.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to something from the first hour on, you know, the minister was on, and and then some of the conversation got to that whole thing of, you know, whether gay is something that people choose or not. It seems to me that in America, if it really were free or true, that shouldn't even be a discussion that's even necessary. That what difference does it matter if somebody wants to live a gay lifestyle? They should be free to do so in this country, basically. Why does it have to be, what would be so wrong if it is a selected lifestyle, assuming that, you know, they're correct?
Well, the reason, actually, there is a reason, Mike, and that is that we're talking about protections at law that are reserved to people who need those protections because of consequences that have nothing to do with decisions that they've made. In other words, people who are African American historically have been discriminated, not just discriminated against America. I mean, they were slaves for several hundred years. And as a consequence of that, and there are still people like George Allen, you know, there's still racists running around who would just as soon, you know, George Allen said he moved to Virginia because he knew that, you know, the African Americans there knew their place, was the phrase he used. Therefore African Americans need the protection of law in order to protect themselves from people like George Allen. If I prefer to wear, not as a statement of sexuality, if I prefer to wear, you know, purple, or I prefer to wear green as all my clothing all day long, that's a choice. I'm not going to go out and say, hey, you know, somebody shouldn't be able to be prosecuted for refusing to employ me because I wear green from head to foot, including green shoes made out of felt or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand.
So there is a fundamental difference between people who choose things and people who are born in a particular way when it comes to applying the force of law. On the other hand, you make a really good point, which is that, you know, in a free society, setting aside the anti-discrimination aspects of this, which is, it's practically impossible to do, but I mean, nonetheless, setting aside those aspects of it, if we really call ourselves a free society, then people really should be free to choose whatever they want.
Yeah. Getting back to the other thing too is this whole
thing. As long as it's consenting adults.
With the minister too, it's like, do we really? You know, it seems to me in this technological society that we're kind of sliding backwards to ignorance, and we're looking at something in a Bible in a book that happened 1,000 years ago or whatever it was. You know, instead of dealing with the situation that we have in the world today. I mean.
Yeah. No,
just to take it literally, I've never been a person who's taken the Bible literally. I've just, you know, I consider it some interesting history, and I consider it a certain thing, but I don't necessarily, it's not the end-all, be-all word to me of God or something. But
well, this is the thing that baffles me, is Christians who take the Bible literally word for word say that, okay, the New Testament replaces the Old Testament.
Yeah, I know.
But then in the New Testament, there are things that they don't follow. As I pointed out, Paul saying that women should keep their heads covered and sit in the back of the church and keep their mouths shut. So it's like, you know, come on, guys, you can't have it all.
No.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call.
Hey,
I appreciate
you.
It. And thanks for listening. Tiffany in Sparks, Maryland. Hey, Tiffany, what's on your mind today?
Oh, my goodness, Tom, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, but I'll get better. Hey,
look, I'm working with a guy's campaign. I'm in Maryland, but he's in Florida, but I followed his story for 6 years. His name's Clint Curtis.
Oh, yeah, he's been on this program twice.
Yeah, awesome. Well, he's running against Congressman Feeney, who asked him to rig the vote, for those
yep.
who don't know. And apparently it's a tight race, and he's got a shot to win, but the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee isn't funding him. And I've been in touch with his campaign. I'd like everybody, if they could, to get a pen and paper, because they want me to apply pressure to the DCCC. They want me to jam the phone lines. So
okay.
I want to give everybody their phone number.
That's great. Yeah, if we see, this is, here's the problem, Tiffany.
What's that?
The DCCC is controlled by Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel is a DLC conservative Joe Lieberman type Democrat, and he wants to become Speaker of the House when he grows up, and maybe even president.
Yeah.
And so he, because he controls the purse strings of the DCCC, he's only sending money to those candidates, those Democratic candidates who have essentially already sworn loyalty to him and who he knows are part of his little cabal of right-wing conservative Democrats, corporatist Democrats, and he's not giving money to real progressives like Clint Curtis, who's running in the 24th District of Florida,
yes.
And all the more the tragedy. So I think it's great what you're suggesting, and I hope people are getting a pen and pencil ready, because in just a minute we're going to give you a phone number so that they can call the DCCC and say, hey, no matter what Rahm Emanuel says, send some money to Clint Curtis, because he could win that race. And number one. And number two, I hope you have a website for Clint Curtis for people who just want to donate to his campaign.
I do.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. The phone number to call and jam their phone lines is area code 202-863-1500. And if you want to help Clint, God bless you, go to curtisforcongress.com.
C-U-R-T-I-S. Yeah. forcongress.com.
Yeah, or search Curtis for Congress. Either way, you'll find it. And also, there's this movie he did. It's his own personal story. And if you go to truthinthebooth.com, you can see the trailer.
Great. Okay, and let's one more time give the phone number for the DCCC, Tiffany.
Yes, sir. 202-863-1500. That's 1500.
202-863-1500. Tiffany, thank you so much for sticking around with us for long enough to give that out and passing that information along to our listeners.
Thank you, Tom. Love
you. Good talking to you. Thank
you
very much.
Bye.
Bill in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
I'm fine. What's up?
Hey, listen, sitting here listening to you, I've added about five things, but basically I wanted to talk about last night. I'm watching the national news. And one of the earlier stories, not the headline story, of course, on, was about, of course, our troops being pulled back from the encirclement of Sadr in Iraq, you know.
Right. Keeping in mind that Sadr's men are the ones who killed Cindy Sheehan's son, not to mention a whole lot of other GIs.
Right, yeah. I mean, this guy is a major militia player there. And
on the other hand, he also controls about 20% of the votes in the legislature.
Right. So then the prime minister tells us to back off, and we back off. And then the next story up is how they're saying we're going to have to train at least 100,000 more security people.
Right, and
now,
here's the third story that goes along with both of those, Bill, and that is that there are hundreds of thousands of weapons and millions, if you include, you know, the ordnance, millions of pieces of weaponry that have gone missing because we have trained militias, we have trained army and police forces, given them weapons and ammunition and fairly sophisticated weaponry, and then they quit. They vanish.
Yeah.
And they take our weapons with them, and now we're being shot at, not by AK-47s and Kalashnikovs, we're being shot at by sophisticated American technology that we gave to them when we trained them 6 months ago.
Yeah, well, that's a part of that story was how we're going to have to arm these 100,000 better and give them more armor vehicles and stuff. I said, I don't think this is a great idea.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is the fact of this is these stories put together is that this guy is the prime minister. He can't come down. He can't hammer Sadr because of the political situation, and he has the American army to back him up to do the hammering.
Yeah.
If he can't do that then, how is he ever going to do that with an Iraqi security force?
He can't leave the green zone, Bill.
Right. So
I mean,
then,
that's how bad it
so
is.
Then,
the prime minister can't leave the green zone.
Yeah, then isn't it quite obvious what is the point we're there?
Yeah, well, the point that we're, exactly. I mean, you know, we're trying to secure these military bases so we'll have a footprint in the Middle East. We're trying to secure the oil supply for the big four American oil companies that are pumping oil out of Iraq right now.
Right.
You know, that's what it's come down to. And I'm, you know, my prediction all along was going to be, or has been, that we're going to replace Saddam Hussein with somebody who is identical or worse.
Yeah,
because that's what it's going to take, you know.
Another strong man regime.
That's right. That's
just
right.
Like, nobody's followed up too much on that wonderful democracy that we were able to set up in Kuwait. Remember when the Kuwaiti royal family was sitting it out in their Switzerland chateau while the American army was getting their oil back for them?
Yep.
And how there were going to be all kinds of reforms in Kuwait and it was going to become... haven't seen much about that.
Well, I think the emir has maybe allowed a couple of the princes to vote on what they'll be served for dinner or something. And, you know, there's some kind of voting going on in Kuwait, but certainly not the democratic with a small D democracy type. That's not.
I think they should point out that whatever Kerry said, it hasn't cost one American life, limb, or their livelihood.
There you go. Well said, Bill. Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, and let's keep in mind, Kerry's joke was about Bush. Kerry made a joke about Bush. And tell the media to get it right. Kerry made a joke about Bush. 45 minutes past the hour.
A song will lift as the mainsail shifts and the boat drifts onto the shoreline. And the sun will respect every face on the deck the hour that the ships come in.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. By the way, for our listeners in Portland, Oregon, this Saturday, November 4th, from 6 to 9 p.m., I will be speaking at the, it's the Unitarian Church. And in the Main Street Sanctuary in Fuller Hall, this says. Well, maybe it's not the... I'm sorry, I'm going to have to get some more information on exactly where that is. Anyhow, it's the End Corporate Personhood Action Group and going to host a pre-election victory party for their satirical candidate. This is a group that's actually running a candidate for governor of Oregon called Rich Corporate Son Incorporated. They're running a corporation for governor. And I'm going to be debating the corporation. So I'll represent the human in the debate. There's going to be musical entertainment, food, book signing, the whole bit, $5 to $15 suggested donations. No one turned away. It'll be Saturday night, and we'll have more information exactly on where soon. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you, 1-866-440-8466. Steve in Toronto, Canada. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Fine. I'm fine. I hope you're well, Steve.
No complaints. Winter's a little warmer than we'd like it, but we last spoke last year on the topic of our country's, your country's difficulties using electronic voting machines and the controversies around the validity of the results given by these machines.
Yeah.
As you may or may not.
We're already, by the way, we're already getting reports from both Texas and Florida of people pushing the buttons for Democratic candidates and the machines saying essentially thank you for voting for the Republican. and numerous repeated reports. And there are hundreds of these reports that have already been tabulated. They're all being blamed on glitches, but not a single one of them has accrued to the benefit of a Democrat. They always accrue to the benefits of Republicans.
Well, we heard about that up here this past week, and as you may or not recall, we still have a paper ballot in all federal and provincial elections up here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And by having a paper ballot, it's 100% accountable and verifiable. If you need to do a recount later on with a judicial recount or anything else that's required, try doing that with a computerized electronic machine that could have been stored somewhere, you know, managed in some way out of the sight of somebody.
Yeah.
The ballots here are actually serial numbered. Your name isn't beside the serial number, but if you have, say, 10 ballots for a poll, 10 serial number ballots have to come back to that poll. So everything is accountable right down to the ballot.
Wow.
Now, there's another extra interesting point. By having a paper ballot, you don't have to get into the situation of having, you know, billion-dollar contracts with companies like Diebold to manufacture these sophisticated machines. You basically print your ballots, and at the end, a couple of years later, when they come out of storage, you literally put them into the recycling system. So mm-hmm. the ballots are literally recycled. You can't get any better than that.
Yeah, yeah. And now, you guys experimented with voting machines. I remember I was living in Vermont, and over in Quebec, they were experimenting with voting machines, what, 5-6 years ago, something like that?
That died fast for the same reasons that you guys are having problems with what you've got down there.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm surprised that the concept of going back to a paper ballot hasn't caught on more.
Well, Bernie Sanders has been pushing for it for a couple of years, saying, hey, you know, we just need to say this is nuts. Let's go back to paper like the rest of the world does. But I'm not hearing it from anybody else.
Well, we sympathize with a lot of the real controversial things going on down there with you guys, and you definitely have our best wishes in trying to sort some of this stuff out, because what happens down there to a certain extent it does affect us up here. I mean, we have to deal with the ramifications of being pulled into, you know, the whole Iraqi situation and Afghanistan because of political pressures.
Isn't the saying, when America sneezes, Canada catches a cold?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, we've tried to really stick with having, you know, blue armbands on our military guys. And this time, you know, because of the current, hopefully short-term prime minister we have, that situation may get reversed back to us working under a
Do you think Harper actually is going to be a short-term prime minister?
Well, you know what? The opposition has a rope around his neck, and they're just waiting, you know, to yank it for another election if he doesn't, you know, kind of clean up his act in certain areas.
Yeah.
He, unfortunately, was a knee-jerk reaction prime minister that was voted in because of some of the really mild, minor political corruptions that happened with the previous Liberal Party.
Yeah.
I mean, typical, you know, we're talking nickel and dime stuff compared to some of the big stuff that goes on down there.
Right.
But the electorate got ticked off, and they voted the government in, but as a minority government.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, that's good because...
he has to form coalitions.
Yeah,
interesting. Steve, thanks for the update.
All right, take care.
Great to hear from you. 1-866-440, and thank you for listening. David in Seattle, Washington. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. I've got another talking point to share with all the listeners from our founding ancestors,
okay.
And it goes like this. The cost of effective democracy is eternal vigilance by the citizenry. And I think maybe if you could pull the clip out and play it in the next few shows prior to the elections of Rumsfeld saying, free people are free to make mistakes.
Right.
You know, in response to Kerry's little botched joke, but they're grabbing for crumbs right now.
Yeah, they are. They are. They're what they're trying to do is divert our attention away from the real issues. The fact that the middle class is being wiped out, that our young men and women are coming home in body bags, that we're responsible for the death of hundreds of thousands of people in a distant country.
Yep.
More people have died. More innocent civilians have died in Iraq than died in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. If this study in the Lancet is correct, I mean, this is mind-boggling. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Harvey Wasserman's going to be dropping by with a preview of the coming election. Michael Weinstein is going to be here with his new book, With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military. That and more and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where you're in the Democracy Zone. And don't forget, my friends, never forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, and be sure to get ready to vote.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Tag, you're it.